Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCAA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
We've got a man sitting here with us, Scott Walter, and everybody should know him from America Unearthed and all sorts of things. So welcome to the show, Scott.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. I was just listening in on your conversations. It sounds like you get into some interesting topics.
Spicy.
Well, we try. We're
spicy
really
for sure.
It's the mystery of the human, and there's so many aspects to the way we act and behave and treat each other and things that drive people and we just love covering that and talking and we let anybody come on and talk about what they believe and show us any evidence and get into it. And we're not, like I said, other than Dan Abrams, everyone's been really nice for, what, almost 7 years now for us.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. I'm picking on him because he was really mean to me.
Well, sometimes you catch people on a bad day, and I don't know.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
But, you know, that does happen, but I don't think that's an excuse when you're on a you know, doing an interview with anybody. I mean, you have to be cordial and whatever is you know, chapping your thing that day, you got to put it aside and be professional and courteous. And,
well,
know,
Don't
bring your baggage to your interviews.
Yeah, and it was only hard because, you know, him and Nancy wouldn't go on at the same time, and then one person wanted to be on board the other, and there was all this stuff going on. And then when he came on, he wouldn't do any of the promos. He wouldn't. It was a real difficult time. It was almost like, oh, okay, well, what do you want to do? But that's, you know, you're right. It might have been a really bad day, and I might just be.
Must have been several bad days.
No.
Well, anyway, I don't know what.
No, it's all good.
To me, there's no excuse for that.
No, it's all good, and I'm sure he's a nice guy normally, and I still watch the shows when I can, you know. But so,
yeah.
What's been going on with Scott? What's been going on?
Oh boy. Well, Scott has been traveling a lot, and I enjoy traveling. I mean, I don't care if it's work or play or whatever. I think travel is a privilege, and you know, to get out there and see you know, different places around the world. I've been very fortunate, and I continue to be able to do that. So I really, really enjoy it. And every place I go, I like to see what's going on there and what the history is, and especially if they have any. I love to do what we call churching. I like going to the older religious houses, whether it's a church, a basilica, or a cathedral, and looking for symbolism, trying to understand the history, who was there, what happened, and I get a kick out of that.
Well, I think it's amazing, and I think we should spend more time on history so that we, the old saying that we don't repeat ourselves, you know, and make mistakes,
right.
You know, learn from the people that went through it.
Those who do not learn from the past are destined to repeat it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's really true. It's really true. And, you know, but yet it still happens, right? We still make those same mistakes. And,
yeah,
you know,
that's crazy. How do you feel about traveling? When you're traveling around, do you like it still, or is it a little bit more, are you a little bit more nervous about traveling?
No, I'm not nervous at all. I mean, it depends on where you're going, of course. If you go to certain parts of the world, you have to be more careful.
Canada.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Canada, boy, I tell you, they're pretty tough up there.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm not picking on the Canadians because I'm half Canadian myself. My mother was born and raised in Lindsay, Ontario, which is north of Toronto, about 90 miles. And I spent all my summers as a kid up there, so I feel a deep connection to our friends to the north. And, of course, I live in Minnesota, so I could be there in a few hours. So that's not a problem. But, no, I enjoy traveling. You know, my dad was a pilot when I grew up for Northwest Airlines. So I grew up being able to fly anytime I wanted. And I did. I took full advantage. And, you know, now that I'm no longer a dependent, obviously. That was decades ago. I still feel like, you know, I'm making up for all those free trips I took, but I still love to travel, and I want to get a good price on the ticket as much as I can, but, you know, I flew for free for so long, I still feel like I'm ahead of the game.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, and you're right. It's a real pleasure. It's a privilege to be able to travel so much and see so much. But so many people don't have that opportunity.
Well, it's, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine one time, and it was a woman, and I remember her telling me she had never left the state that she was born in and lived in. She had never left the state. And I'm like, how does that happen? How could you not do that? I mean, just once I would get the car and just drive to Wisconsin if that was the case and, you know, step foot in it so I could say I went there. But, I mean, it just underscored the fact that a lot of people don't have that opportunity, and that's why you have to appreciate it when you do. So,
yeah.
And we do.
So now you kind of work on, lately you've been talking about the Kensington Stone and Templar Knights and stuff like that.
Right.
So what is your most, I don't want to say, well, surprising or most exciting?
Discovery.
Thank you.
Discovery? Well, in the book, I'm going to reveal a lot of things. But one of the things that I think is really important, and it was shocking, and I talked a little bit about it in my last book, Akhenaten, the Founding Fathers, was, you know, the Talpiot tomb. Are you guys familiar with the Talpiot tomb in Jerusalem?
I think so. Is that the one where they found the five skulls in a specific order?
Not five skulls. They found three skulls in an equilateral triangle. Well, it was in a triangle, but they were found in the east, south, and west quadrants of this particular tomb, and inside this tomb, there were 10 ossuaries. You know what an ossuary is, right?
Yes.
It's a bone box. And anyway, inside this tomb, there were 10 ossuaries, 7 inscribed with names, 6 in Aramaic, 1 in Greek, and we're talking about names like Jesus, son of Joseph. James, son of Joseph, brother of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Judah, son of Jesus. Matthew, Joseph, Maria. And the last one that was carved in Greek, it was Mariemne the Mara. Mariemne is basically a pet name found in the Acts of Philip that refers only to Mary Magdalene. And the Mara is a title of honor, as in Lord, Master, or Queen, that has only been found on, this is the sixth one in Jerusalem of the, I don't know what it is, 3,000 ossuaries that have been cataloged in the Israeli Antiquities Association. And they, so you put all those names together, every one of them corresponds to the royal family. And what do you do with that?
Yeah, well,
I mean, if you're a Christian and you believe, you know, in Jesus being the Son of God,
mm-hmm.
that's a problem, right?
And here's where I think that the problem would lie, is with those little words that you glanced over, son of.
Yeah.
Son of Jesus.
Yeah.
Scott, this is just me talking, but I don't see why it should be a problem. Now I'm speaking as a Jewish man, but
right.
You know, with Christian sympathies, but I don't see why that would be such. Why would that be such an issue?
Well, here's the thing. What I always say to people when I have a discussion like this is I think you have to, from the get-go, you have to define the discussion. Are we talking about religion or are we talking about real life? Because the fact is you can't mix the two because it doesn't work. And, you know, if you want to talk about faith, that's fine. That's one discussion and that's great. But if you want to talk about real life, which is kind of where I come from most of the time, that's a different discussion. For example, and I'm just speaking for myself, until I see a person rise from the dead, I'm not buying it, or evidence that supports that. Just like until I see a virgin birth, I'm not buying that either. So that's just the real world. I'm just saying, look, I've never seen it. I've never heard of it really happening in real life, so until I do, I'm not going to buy that.
Well,
but the other thing is,
and
being Jewish, you could probably speak to this better than I can, but my understanding is in the first century, a rabbi was not only required to be married, but to have a son for succession.
Yes,
have you heard
that's
that?
True. Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
So why is that a big deal? If Jesus was truly a rabbi, this would be expected, right?
Mm-hmm. And they addressed him as teacher, which would translate back into Revi or rabbi.
Right, right. So I guess if you strip away, you know, sort of the fantastic stuff that I, you know, just doesn't happen in the real world, the fact that he had a son and that he was married should not be a surprise to anyone. Really, I mean, if you look at it pragmatically. But, you know, getting back to the question you originally asked me, what is the most exciting discovery? I won't say it's the most exciting, but it is truly exciting for me, is, you know, I've worked with, you know, Simca Giacobbici and Charlie Pellegrino and the guys that did the work, and James Tabor, on the Talpiot tomb that brought the Talpiot tomb to the world. And one of the things that Charlie shared with me, this is getting to be a few years ago now, it was like right after my last book was published in 2013, but he had taken some pictures of the Jesus son of Joseph ossuary. Now the Aramaic, that name is inscribed on the side of the box, on one of the ends, which is typical. And it's written in very readable Aramaic as far as I understand. But what was unknown to people and has never been published until I published it on my blog a few years ago were Charlie's pictures that he took of a symbol that was carved on the lid of the Jesus ossuary. And I'll never forget when he sent me this email. He said, Simca and I think that this is a star symbol that had to do with a Jewish story, an ancient Jewish story, and I can't even tell you what the story was because I quickly looked at the symbol and I disagreed with them. And I said, guys, that's not a star symbol. I said, that's a monogram of two symbols. And when I told them what it was and explained it, they both agreed with me. And what that symbol is a monogram of a hooked X and a Tau cross. And when I saw it, I saw it immediately. And I pointed out that the Tau is slightly below the center of the X. And it's clearly a hooked X. It's got an upper, a bar added to the upper right arm. It's clear. It's distinct. You can't mistake it. And what I further said to them is I said, well, in the old Aramaic alphabet, the old Hebrew alphabet, the alpha, the first letter is,
the Aleph.
Looks like, yeah, the Aleph looks like a stonemason's version of the Hebrew Aleph. And it looks like a hooked X. I mean, if you think of an Aleph character, it kind of looks like a hooked X. And the Tau is the last letter. And what I argued was that it was the Alpha, the Omega, the beginning and end of the, I mean, isn't that something that Jesus reportedly said? But there it is on his ossuary, and it's almost like it's a name. It's at the, if you held up this, you know, rectangle-shaped lid and put it vertically, the hooked X and Tau cross would be perfectly aligned in the upper, you know, upper center of the lid. Have you heard of that before?
It sounds familiar. I may have spoken with you about it on a previous show.
Okay, we may have, but I just find that incredible. And, of course, you know, the hooked X is on the Kensington runestone, the Spirit Pond runestones, the Narragansett runestones, in certain documents that are connected to Templars and navigators in history that are probably associated with those orders as well. And the question is, where did they get it? One of the things I've also argued is that the Templars not only went under the Temple Mount and found certain things, but I believe they may have also gone into the Talpiot tomb. And the question is, why did they do that? Well, tombs are a great place to hide treasures, right? But mm-hmm. The other thing that I think that they could have done is gone into that tomb and collected some of the bones of the people of the royal family, including Jesus, as a little insurance against the church.
Well, why not take all of them? If you're going to do that, I mean, I understood their aversion, you know, to stealing bodies. But if you're going to go that far as insurance, why not take the ossuary? Back then, they couldn't prove DNA. But if right. I have the actual the ossuary, this is insurance. See, look, right here, it says Jesus.
Right. Well, you're. It's a great question. I don't know what the answer is. All I can tell you is the ossuaries were still in the tomb. But there was evidence that somebody had entered the tomb in the historical past sometime around the First Crusade. So who would have done that? Well, if you believe, as I do, that the leadership of the Templars, who are part of these bloodline families that you hear people talk about, they would have been descendants of the royal family. And if anybody is going to know where their ancestors' burial place is, it's probably going to be them, right? It's going to be family. So, you know, that's the thesis that I've been going under, and I think it's pretty plausible. Why they didn't take the ossuaries, it's a great question. I don't know. In fact, they may have brought an ossuary and put it in there. The one that's carved in Greek would be the Magdalene, right?
Yeah, that's
odd. And she didn't die in Jerusalem and may not have been buried at the same time. She supposedly disappeared into France, and maybe her followers or family members brought her back after things had settled down with the Romans and put her back in there. That's just a thought that I've had.
That's a good point, because they all eventually would have had to have been moved, because they had to bury, or they had to prep Jesus' body after his death before Shabbat, which was falling the next day, which is why they actually borrowed a tomb, it says, from Joseph of Arimathea.
Arimathea, yeah.
So they would have had to move Jesus later.
Well, and actually, there's a tomb that's right next to it, in that they call this the garden tomb, and then they have another one they call the patio tomb, and the patio tomb is believed to be that of Joseph of Arimathea. There are several ossuaries inside of that one. They've only taken cameras into that tomb. They have not removed any of the ossuaries, but there's some very interesting symbolism on those ossuaries, and they believe that to be of Joseph of Arimathea. The Telpiah tomb is only, I don't even think it's 100 feet away. And so there's some speculation that that was a tomb that was the property of Joseph of Arimathea, but I don't know if anybody knows that for sure, but that's an interesting point that you brought up.
Now, the three skulls, I want to come back to that, because that in of itself is symbolic, and especially their positions.
Well, no question about it, because those are where the three highest officers sit in a Masonic lodge, and a Templar preceptory is in the east, south, and west, and that just happens to be where those three skulls were placed. And those three skulls were in relatively good condition. The bones inside the ossuaries were pretty degraded. So the interpretation is that those skulls were placed in there at the time the tomb was breached, around the time of the First Crusade. So here again, if it was the Templars, they would leave those three skulls. My interpretation is they left them as symbolic guardians, perhaps three Templar knights who died during the siege of Jerusalem, who would have been honored to have their skulls placed as symbolic guardians inside the tomb of their ancestral king, grandmaster.
And also, it would be an extreme honor for part of you to be placed next to, you know, the bones of Jesus.
Absolutely. If you were a Templar knight, what higher honor could there be? I can't think of one.
So this,
but that's my interpretation on it. I don't know if it's right, but works for me.
And I have to agree. And the hooked X just makes that connection all the way from Jerusalem all the way to America in the Kensington Stone.
You got it.
The imprint.
Now, if you accept that, which I do, it's more than a little plausible, and it also supports the fact that it was the Templars who left these rune stones here, most notably the Kensington Stone as a land claim, because on line one it says, or line one and two, 8 Goss and 22 Northmen on this acquisition business or taking up land. My God, what the hell do you think it says? It says it's a land claim. That's the first thing it says. But if you accept that, the problem that you run into is, why have I gotten so much pushback on this thesis that, to me, from a forensic standpoint, and by the way, I do forensics for a living. I do forensic investigations all day, every day, for the past, 33 years. I kind of know a little bit what I'm doing, and I have to be honest and tell you guys, this is the easiest evidence trail I've ever followed. It led to only one group, and all the facts fit, everything makes sense, but the problem is, why am I the only person that's talking about this? I like to think that I've done some reasonably good work, but there's no magic here. I'm not some genius that's smarter than everybody else. That's not what's going on, I can promise you that. So why is it that nobody else can, quote, see this? Well, I don't believe that. I think they do see it, but I don't think that they want to accept it. And what I say is, unfortunately, when you accept the Templars as being the ones that place this land claim stone in the center of the continent 130 years before Chris Columbus. You know that guy that didn't set foot on the continent that already had millions of people living here? That guy?
Yes.
The problem, here's the problem. If you accept this thesis, all of a sudden you trigger a series of dominoes that begin to fall, and they go to inconvenient places for certain groups. Like, I'll just throw one out. The Roman Catholic Church. Those dominoes go to a place that we've been talking about for the last several minutes, the Talpiot Tomb. Mm-hmm. And guess what? They don't want to go there. Do they?
I have to agree. And right before you made the point, that's exactly what I was thinking. You know, you,
right.
you don't want, you know, because it's going to challenge their belief system. So if we just ignore it, the monster goes away.
Well, or if you look, what they're doing, and they also, well, that's one thing. They don't respond. They just let you sit there in silence and eventually go away. Or here's the other thing that they do, and they've done this with me because they know that I'm not going to go away, is they can't attack the evidence, okay, because the evidence is irrefutable. The case is proven. I mean, it is. It's look, if I was able to testify to the evidence that we have in a court of law to the Kensington runestone, for example, it would, and I do this all the time, by the way. I testify as an expert witness all the time. And, you know, and this may sound strange, but hear me out. I've never lost a case. It's not, and it's not because I'm so great. It's because if I have a client that has a loser case, I'll say, look, the evidence is stacked against you. I'm not going to lie for you in court, so you better settle. Because if I get on the witness stand, it's not going to go well, right? But if it's good, if it's a good, strong case and I testify, fortunately, we haven't lost yet. So I understand how this process works. And in a court of law, if I argued the facts of the Kensington runestone, the other side wouldn't even show up. Because there is no evidence to support that it's a hoax or that it's 18th century. And how could there be? Because all the evidence points in the other direction. But so they don't attack, they don't come to me and say, okay, well, we want to talk to you about the evidence. We don't agree with this. We don't agree with that. They don't do that because they won't agree because there's nothing to disagree with. So what's the fallback position that they do? They attack me, the person.
I was going to say that would be the next thing. Take out
the
person.
That's what they do. You got it. And, you know, look, I don't know what they could go after, but that's what they do. They try to undermine me. It got so bad that I had a wiki page, and there was so much garbage that was being put up that was just flat out untrue. I told them, I told Wiki, I said, take it down or I will sue you. I don't care if I have a wiki page. That doesn't validate my existence. That doesn't make me a person, whether I have a wiki page or not. So take it down. So if you Google my name, you won't find a wiki page.
Well, we'll start one.
There you go. We got you covered.
Yeah, but then the trolls will go on there. I mean, anybody can edit those pages, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And you also have to understand the editors, many of those editors are anti-pre-Columbian research. So they allow it. I can tell you who they are. I know who they are.
Uh-oh.
There's a lot going on that people don't understand. Why? Let me give you an example, okay? If you go to the Kensington Runestone wiki page, now this may sound like bragging, but it's not bragging. It's a fact. It's the truth. Nobody has done more research on the Kensington Runestone than yours truly. In the history of the stone, I've written 4 books now where large parts of it deal with the Kensington Runestone, including Compelling New Evidence, which was a 574-page book I co-authored with Dick Nielsen. You will not see my name on that entire page anywhere, or any of my books referenced. Nothing. Zero. Zip. Why is that? But you know what you will see? There was a book that was written by a scholar. Professor Alice Kehoe wrote a book called examining the Kensington Runestone question holistically. Her book was an academic review of our book, and that book is referenced as a citation on the wiki page, but not the book that she wrote about. Go figure.
Well,
so that's what's going on, guys.
Yeah. Well, I know. I work with a Jew.
Are you blaming the Jews for all of this? Are they the ones that are behind? No, they're not. I know they're
most
not.
Most people totally support us. We've had total people. We've had people, you know, the Jews did 9/11. The Jews did.
Oh, I'm sure.
They've done everything wrong they did. So, you know.
Well, you know what? I am constantly amazed when I hear things like people that are Holocaust deniers. And yeah. I'm like, have you not seen the pictures? Have you not seen the video? I mean, seriously? It's like, I can't even believe we live in a world like that sometimes when there are people that, and I don't think it's closed-mindedness, it's just outright racism to the extreme, and I just don't get it. I honestly don't. I don't know how people can be so horrible to other people, people that can be racist to so many people. I've been dealing a lot with Native Americans. And they have been absolutely wonderful and helpful. And the reason that I've been dealing with them is for the simple logical reason that if the Templars came over here or any of these other cultures from different parts of the world in the historical past, who do you think they ran into? Right? Why doesn't anybody ever talk about the interaction with the natives and talk to the natives? Maybe they might know something. That was one of the first things I thought of years ago. Well, gee, the Kensington Party, how are they going to get to Minnesota unless the natives left them, right? They're not going to fight their way to the center of the continent, for crying out loud. There's no way they could do it. So what was that dynamic like? Pardon?
Even by water, if they traveled by way of the Great Lakes through the rivers, they're still going to encounter these other cultures.
Oh, forget it. It's not going to happen. There's no way it's going to happen unless the natives let them. And so that was the question that I looked into early on. And I reached out to them. And, you know, I mean, I heard some very, you know, one of the things they told me, said, look, we don't talk to white people. And I said, well, I can appreciate that. You know, that little genocide thing that happened to your people, I understand why you feel that way. But what I've learned with any person, treat them with respect, respect their culture, and listen, and you'd be surprised what you get back. And they have been wonderfully supportive, and I can tell you this, guys, they know. They know all about the Templars. They know all about these cultures that came here, but nobody ever stopped to talk to them. And part of the reason why so many of them were killed, in my opinion, was it got rid of the witnesses. I believe that. They believe it too.
No smoke and peace pipe.
Well, all I can tell you is that they are, I mean, think about this. Can you think of any other culture in the world that has learned to live in its environment, live in balance better than natives?
I honestly can't. No.
I can't. I mean, they, you know, when they kill an animal for food, I mean, you know, not only do they thank the Great Spirit, but they thank the creature for giving its life to help sustain them. And, you know, it's just when you stop and learn what these people are about, you learn a lot. And it's really amazing. And one of the things I've been fortunate enough to do is I've been in a native sweat, and I spent the time to earn the right to ask my questions, You don't just walk up to them and start peppering them with questions. You have to earn their trust. And I asked them about the Templars, and they said, oh, you mean our blood brothers? That's what they said.
Wow. I mean, which means that there was a very significant relationship there.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, one of the things that I get criticized for all the time is that the, you know, I say that the Templars venerated the ancient sacred feminine, the goddess, that they just pretended to be Catholic and used the Virgin Mary as a symbol for their true faith. I mean, they just played along with it. But that's not what the, and I'm talking about the leadership of the Templars, not the everyday knights that were fighting on the front lines. But there was something about them, and as I, the more I dug into them, the more I realized this is what it was all about. Native Americans are matriarchal cultures. They venerate the goddess too. And so when the Vikings came over, they were basically assholes. They just did what they wanted. They didn't respect the culture that was there. And according to the natives, they wiped them out. The Algonquin tribes met with the their historical enemies, the Iroquois. They met in council and said, look, we're going to have to deal with these white people sooner or later, so you might as well help us now. We're going to, if you don't take care of it now, you're going to deal with them later. It's going to be a bigger problem. That's what they told me, and they wiped them out. When the Templars came over shortly thereafter, they had a different attitude. They had things in common. They shared rituals. They shared degrees. They shared a veneration of the ancient goddess and the sacred feminine. And, you know, if you look at matriarchal cultures, they certainly respect their women. and that was the secret to their having success over here. And they did it quietly. And the Templars that came over and stayed assimilated within a generation, and they basically became natives. It makes you wonder, is there something to this whole story that the blonde-haired, blue-eyed natives, the Mandan, up in our country here, not too far from the Kensington Ruins, don't literally a couple hours drive away?
Now,
interesting, huh?
Yes. Now, before we run out of time, I want to ask this. The Kensington Stone says that they were on an acquisition journey. What were they here?
Yeah, acquisition business or taking up land. The word is closer in Swedish.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Yeah, to business. Yeah.
So would it be fair to say then that this is almost like a property line marker? And if it is, where's the rest of them? Are there more that could be outlining this property? And was this a deal with the natives? Was this, you know, like I bought my property or I bought my house?
You know what? As far as the dynamic with the natives, I don't know. I don't know if they had some type of treaty or agreement. I know that they obviously got along. Like I said before, there's no way they could fight their way to Kensington. They had to travel with them. But you know, the other thing is the Kensington Stone is found along the north-south continental divide of North America, and back in certain countries, I know the Dutch and the French had a land claim practice at that time where if you could prove that you navigated to the headwaters of a river system, you could lay claim to the entire river system and all the land associated with it. So theoretically at Kensington, where so many critics have said, why would they put a stone in the middle of nowhere? Well, for some reason, I don't know why, I'm the first person to bring this up, that if you the Kensington Runestone land claim, theoretically, they could have laid claim to the entire Red River Hudson Bay watershed to the north and the Mississippi Missouri watershed to the south, which is about half the continent.
I mean, holy crap. I mean, that's why I'm asking this. Imagine, this is huge. That if they owned all of that, you own all the major trade routes in America. And
well,
most of the land.
That, not just that. It says from Vinland, which is
Finland, or
the East Coast, right?
Yes.
That's the East Coast, the northeast coastline of North America, from Vinland far to the west. So it's not just the watersheds. They're laying claim from the East Coast far to the west, I presume west of Kensington. Essentially, they're claiming the whole continent.
Now, and literally,
my interpretation of it,
and it's literally carved in stone, which back then was the greatest medium that they had that they knew would last. You know, we all know what happens with paper, papyrus, clay.
Yep.
You know, this is in stone. So, having said all of that, and you know, we kind of alluded earlier to a Masonic connection. It's chicken or egg, which came first, the Masons or the Templars, or Templars or Masons? At this point, it really doesn't matter. Could
theoretically,
later on, down the road, could Templars suddenly come out of hiding and say, listen, we literally own all of this. Right here is our proof.
They already did.
What?
They already did. They're called our founding fathers who founded this nation. And I can guarantee you this, guys. They knew all about the Templars who came over here. What most people don't know is George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Ben Franklin, Paul Revere, all those guys were not only Freemasons, they were Templars too. And they knew what the Templars had done. They knew about it. Look, when Thomas Jefferson sent Lewis and Clark west to basically examine the Louisiana Purchase, right? Did you know that you knew Meriwether Lewis was a brother, right? That he had secret communications with Thomas Jefferson using a Masonic box code, and the code word for the box code was artichokes? They went on this, and Clark was not a Mason at the time. Most people don't even know about this fact, but in July of 1806, on the way back, they split up for 6 weeks. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Lewis, they split up at the mouth of the Little Bighorn River. Look it up. They split up at the mouth of the Little Bighorn River, and he went up with nine guys. who were all Masons. And they went up and they crossed the Continental Divide. Now, as a Mason, I can tell you I've been through all the degrees of the Scottish Rite, all the degrees of the York Rite. And I can tell you that there are real historical truths embedded within the rituals that we learn and then perform and pass on to the next group of candidates. The difficult part is trying to figure out what's real and what's not. But one of the most important rituals in Freemasonry is something that deals with King Solomon's Temple and the nine arches and the secret vault below the Sanctum Sanctorum in the Holy of Holies of King Solomon's Temple. When I was going through one of the degrees, the Select Master degree of the York Rite, we learn in that degree about what goes into and what's on the Ark of the Covenant. And I can't tell you the details. Mm-hmm. But what happens in this degree, you learn about how the three Grand Masters, King Solomon, Hiram Abiff, and Hiram King of Tyre, where all the wood came from to build the temple and the scaffolding and everything else.
Yeah, the cedars.
Pardon me?
I was just saying, yes, the cedars.
Yep. And what they do in the ritual is we learn that the three Grand Masters build the secret vault, which is the ninth arch, right? And then in the degree it says, and the other eight arches were built by 22 men from Gebel. And I went, 8 and 22? Those are the first two numbers on the Kensington runestone. I'm probably the only guy that would pick that out, right? Well, guess what? When I went through the rest of the ritual, the other six numbers that appear in sequence on the Kensington runestone are in the degree. So all eight numbers occur in sequence. Fact. You would have better luck picking the lottery numbers than picking those eight numbers in a row. Did you realize that?
I did not. I am not at that degree yet, but that is profound.
Are you a Mason?
I am accepted and taken by brothers and fellows. But
I am so taken and accepted by brethren and fellows. Very good. So you've just done the Blue Lodge degrees.
Yes,
have you done Scottish Rite?
I have not.
Oh, okay. Well, you might want to consider seeking the additional light, and the York Rite is amazing. It's more Christian. Most of the guys that go through it think it's Christian, but there's a whole other layer to it that is not Christian in that sense. It's a different kind of Christianity, but in any case, that Select Master degree and those secrets that are in there are on the runestone. And so what I discovered was that the inscription on the runestone is part real history, part real information, and part allegory. There are no 10 dead men, okay? The Ark of the Covenant, I will tell you, this thing that's in it, everybody knows one of the things that's in the Ark of the Covenant, right?
Oh, of course.
And Ten Commandments, right?
Yes, well, at least the second set.
Well, there are two tens on the Kensington runestone. And in the degree, you have the Sanctum Sanctorum, where the treasures, you know, the Ark of the Covenant and the relics were kept, right? But in the secret vault, there was a copy of all the true treasures. So there's two arcs and two Ten Commandments, two tens, 10 men red from blood and death, 10 men by the sea with our ships.
Oh, wow. I see, because I'm looking at the Kensington stone here and the translation.
You see 10 twice, right?
Yes, I do.
Yes, and they occur in sequence in the degree, in the Select Master degree. And then 14 days journey from this island. What is 14? 14 is the number of resurrection.
and also far to the west, which means that they're in the east.
From Finland, far to the east.
Yeah.
Far to the west. Yeah.
And we had a camp.
But what here's what I think. Just stay with me for a sec. According to the natives, they have told us there is a secret vault in Montana that the Templars put stuff in, because they took them over there. They showed them where to put it. And the natives have been guarding it ever since. Thomas Jefferson knew about the secret vault. And he told his brother, Meriwether Lewis, you need to go check on that, because that was the crown jewel of the Louisiana Purchase. And who do we get the Louisiana Purchase from?
The
French, right?
Yes.
Right, right. And you know that Thomas Jefferson was the American ambassador to France from 1785 to 1789. And his name is on the rolls on the rolls of the Lodge of Nine Sisters in France. And I just wonder if somebody may have whispered in his ear about the secret vault. Because then we got the money, we purchased it, and he sent Lewis to go check on it. I can tell you this, according to where the natives say that the vault is, when Lewis went up and crossed the Continental Divide, he was within a day's ride of the secret vault. And what he did was, I'm sure, is he checked on it, reported back to Jefferson that it was safe, that it's there, and there's more to that story.
Yeah, they may have to start looking in more of these mounds. Do you think they would? The natives would have placed all that in a mound?
Well, I find it very interesting that the Smithsonian Institution, in the middle of the middle 1800s, once we had control of the territory, started a mound excavation program, and they were sanitizing all the mounds of evidence of any pre-Columbian contact. Certainly they were looking for treasures. And you know who one of the biggest funders of the Smithsonian Institution is?
Oh, I'm afraid to ask.
The Roman Catholic Church.
Oh.
Why do you think they hate me so much? They do. They hate me. Look, when I busted them on the Bat Creek Stone, the Bat Creek Stone is a first century Paleo-Hebrew inscription. When it was found in 1889 by John Emmert, brother, wait till you hear this story if you haven't heard this. This one will make your blood boil, okay? When they found that inscription, they thought it was Paleo-Cherokee, not a threat, right? No problem. So they cataloged it, they put it in the archives, and that was the end of it. But in 1964, a female, Henrietta Mertz, who was a Chicago patent attorney and an amateur researcher, she was in the Smithsonian Institution, and she found the Bat Creek box, and she flipped the inscription over. Because if you look in the Smithsonian Institution, published it in 1894, I believe. I've got that volume downstairs, but anyway, it's upside down, and she looked at it and she thought she saw some Phoenician characters, and she took it to Cyrus Gordon, who was one of the top Semitic scholars in the world back in 1970, and he wrote an article and he said, this isn't Paleo-Cherokee, it's Paleo-Hebrew, first century Paleo-Hebrew. Now at that point, you would think that our nation's museum, right, would say, oh my gosh, that's interesting. We should study that.
Yeah, let's look into this.
Right? That's not what happened. What happened is they immediately came out and said it was a fake. And then they blamed John Emmert. John Emmert was the field agent that they hired to do that particular dig. So they throw this guy under the bus. They accuse him 80 years after his death. Okay, then they hired a couple of archaeological hacks, Manfred and Quast, a couple of idiots, to make all these outrageous claims. But what the facts are this, when Emmert, because I've read Emmert's notes, all the detail in these notes, nobody ever reads the first-hand information. What happened is, in this mound, the third mound of the Bat Creek Complex, that he found nine bodies, seven shoulder-to-shoulder in the north quadrant of the mound, two in the southwest quadrant, one with his head to the north, the other with his head to the south. Under the skull of the only person in that mound with their head to the south was a birch bark bundle, sacred bundle, under his skull, or her, we don't know the sex of that person. And in that birch bark bundle was a red ochre stone for face paint. There was a bone awl made of antler, or a bone. There was some wood fragments, two copper bracelets, and the small inscribed stone. In the early 80s, a friend of mine, who's now a retired professor of economics at Ohio State University, Hugh McCullough, he initiated a testing program of the Bat Creek artifacts. They did a C-14 on the bone awl, and they got 60 to 600 A.D. So by association, everything in that bundle, because they were all found together, whatever date you get on the organic material, the date is the same for everything, right?
You would think.
Well, it's called science.
Yeah.
Well, then he tested the copper bracelets, and guess what? They weren't copper. They were brass, and they had the exact same chemical composition of copper, tin, and lead as first century Jewish bronze work. I thought the natives didn't practice metallurgy. So what's going on? So I'm the first person to look at the Bat Creek stone scientifically from a geological standpoint, and I went and I asked them, the museum, if I could study it, and they said, no, we're not going to send you the stone. I said, that's okay, I'll come to your museum, I'll do it there. And I did. The Smithsonian tried to put me off. So anyway, I went there, I did the analysis, and the director was with me the entire time. He saw what I did, and I wrote a report, and I said, the stone is old, the weathering is consistent with this, and by association, by the way, the C-14 date, the bracelets, the brass, the whole thing, this thing is authentic. Well, for the first time in its history, I wrote a blog when we did an episode about the Bat Creek stone. The Smithsonian responded to my blog with an official statement saying, our position is it's a hoax and it was done by John Emmert and blah, 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 blah. And then I wrote back to them and I said, well, you know what, guys? I said, you better be careful because you're throwing John Emmert under the bus. And I said, John Emmert did 200 digs for the Smithsonian. And if he's so incompetent and he's a fraudster that that you guys would hire a guy to do that, then you call into question not just the Bat Creek stone dig, but the 200 other digs that he did. And I also said, look, if you're so incompetent that your people hired these field agents, I said, not only is John Emmert called into question, you call into question all the digs they did. So then the Smithsonian came back on my blog and modified their statement, and they said, it's still a hoax, but they took John Emmert out of it. That's on my blog. It's still there. I'll never take it down. That's the first time they ever responded officially. Now, let me tell you something about John Emmert, because to get permission to even look at the stone, I had to go to the Eastern Band of Cherokee to get permission to look at that stone, because it's a funerary object. It came out of a burial, right? Very sacred to their people. And they said, yeah, we'll support you on this. Screw the Smithsonian. That's what they said to me.
Good.
And the Smithsonian had no choice. They had to let me see it. So what happened is the daughter of the senior elder of the Eastern Band, she became very interested in John Emmert. So she researched him. She found his descendants. John Emmert was a Civil War veteran, wounded twice, buried in an unmarked cemetery in Abington, Tennessee. John Emmert was also a constable, a cop, right? And last I checked, you have to be vetted to be in law enforcement, right? Background check.
Mm-hmm.
And John Emmert was also a Freemason. And I don't have to tell you, we have to be vetted before we can become a Freemason, right?
Absolutely.
This is the guy that they threw under the bus without even looking into his background. So after all of this was done and my report was done, the Eastern Band of Cherokee paid $10,000 to buy a monument to put in the cemetery to mark for John Emmert. $10,000. And they called me and they said, what type of an obelisk, what type of a monument should we do? And I said, because he was a Mason, you should do an obelisk. And they did. They paid $10,000. Now his grave is marked there.
Wow. Wow.
This is what's going on. Nobody ever hears these stories. Thanks for letting me tell them.
Well, we're the minor part of the mainstream media.
Well, this is the kind of stuff that people should be hearing about. This is what gets suppressed, right?
This begs the question.
Who is the guy that carved that stone? Are you telling me the Hebrews were here in the first century? My answer to that is, yes, they were.
Why couldn't they be? Because it said that Solomon sent out ships in every direction. Why would they not wind up here eventually?
You're not going to get an argument from me.
Yeah, given the right conditions. Man,
you're not
going to
get an argument from me. I have no doubt about it. Look, the evidence speaks loud and clear. I mean, what else could have put those artifacts in there? I mean, that could have been a Hebrew person right there. I for all we know, unfortunately, guess what? Of all the artifacts, they collected a jawbone. John Emmert said he collected the lower jaw because the bones were severely degraded. The only thing that was really intact was the lower jawbone. And guess what? You're not going to believe this, guys. I've inquired for that bone, and the Cherokee have inquired. And guess what? They can't find it. Oh, boy, that's a shocker.
How convenient, huh?
They know immediately what we would do, right? If we got that jawbone, what do you think we'd do?
What, DNA?
Yeah.
That's what I'd do.
Hell yeah. We'd pull one of those molars, and we would. That's going to be the best preserved DNA. We'd do C14 on the bone. We'd do DNA on the tooth, and we'd see what we get. And, oh, my goodness, they're not going to let that happen, are they?
No, but it'd be a great show.
Well, we stay tuned, guys. There's a lot more coming, but this is the kind of stuff that the world needs to know about. And you know what? I mean, if the Jews were here, the Egyptians were here, the Celts were here, the Phoenicians were here, who cares? Why is it such a threat? I don't get it. I think it's fascinating. I think it's cool. I know it's true. So let's just do it. Are they worried about the land claim? Is the government worried that the French are going to, try to claim America? Look, the guys that put the land claim down finished the job. It's called America. It's founded by the Masons, and you're welcome.
See, it's a Mason Jewish collusion. I knew.
Well, see,
it
is. I am.
Deal with it.
I am a Jewish Mason. I am the perfect conspiracy.
Yeah.
Awesome, brother. That's great.
Right, I get it all. Well, Scott,
as you know, when we go into lodge, what's on the altar? A Torah, a Koran, a Bible. Some of them have an eagle feather. I took my obligation on the Jefferson Bible because at the end of the day, that deity that all these different religions venerate, it's the same thing, right? The sooner people in this world realize that, the less fighting there's going to be. That's my opinion.
Yeah, it's just going to be beyond our lifetime.
Unfortunately, I think you're right.
Yeah. The way it looks right now, it's going to be a little while.
Yeah.
Well, it's not going to happen.
It's our job to educate, and hopefully, you know, people.
Well, that's the idea behind what we do here. We like to see that. I wished more of the network would get on board. I'm so tired of 24/7 politics and all that stuff. And no real news or information or things that people are doing or science is doing. You know,
we're living in really strange times, and you know, I mean personally, I'm not going to be shy about it. I don't like our leadership, what they're doing right now. It's so divisive. And it's both parties are responsible, and you know, we just have to find common ground, but we just don't have the right leadership that seeks that. And what I find incredible is that, you know, and again, I hate to keep singing the praises of Masonry, but you know, before you become a Mason, the first thing that happens is you are humbled, right? And the one thing that I think more people should appreciate and understand is that we all came into this world with nothing, right? And we're going to go out with nothing. And at the end of the day, the guy with the most money doesn't win. It's not the way it works. It's the impact you have on people that you interact with. And the positive influence that you have on the people you interact with. And that's it, I think.
Yeah. Well, what else is there? That's the most important.
What else is there? I mean, when we all pass to that celestial lodge or wherever you go, wherever you believe that you go, and people come to your funeral, what are they going to talk about? They're not going to talk about how much, what a great business deal he did or how much money you had. They're going to talk about the impact that person had on your life. That's it. And that's what more people need to understand. And if more people understood that, I think we would probably all get along better.
Well, hopefully. Hopefully we're going in the right direction, but it's so hard to tell.
Yeah, it's a big, wide, complicated world, and the answers, you know, we can throw the answers out there and talk about it, but in reality, it's a lot harder to do, but that doesn't mean you stop trying.
That's right.
That's what we try to do, you know, educate people and bring the light, and hopefully they'll learn from it, and
the big thing I like to see people do is to actually, when they hear or see something, is actually to think about it and research it and get involved and become a part of it rather than just, I don't know what you call it now, nobody's interested, it seems like, or it's a lot harder to get people involved.
Well, part of the problem is we're all stuck on our phones and we don't interact with people. We don't talk enough. We don't listen. And I people need to read more and be more curious, and and that's what, you know, we do on our shows, is we try to educate people, we try to get them to think. And I truly believe that if you give people intelligent content, they'll come, you know, and at least a certain segment of people, there are people that want to learn out there, and there's just so much to learn, and it's so fun when you learn something new and it enriches your life. It's just a cool thing. I just wish more people would discover that, you know?
Yeah, we have to have UFO shows to keep us up in the top 10.
Well, I'll tell you, I don't know if it's as funny as people think. People ask me if what do you think of UFOs, or do you believe in UFOs? And I say, I don't dismiss anything because I don't have the answers. I haven't seen enough evidence to convince me that there is something there, but, you know, I just, that doesn't mean that they don't exist. I don't know. I'm not afraid to say I don't know.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of how it is. You want to keep getting the evidence and figure things out. I think that's the best part of it, really.
Well, absolutely. And my mind, I'm open, I'm receptive to any new evidence, anything new that's tangible. And let's wait and see what happens. In my mind, that's an open question. It's fascinating. I mean, there's just too much smoke out there for there not to be a fire somewhere. And maybe the government is hiding some of it. Maybe they're worried how people will react. I don't know. Maybe there is something there.
Well, Kevin's been abducted several times, and he's had my time slips all the time. He doesn't know what day it is.
Apparently you didn't get along too well with them because they kicked you out. They sent you back, right?
Yeah. Nobody wants me.
Yeah, they said forget it. Forget it.
No.
Well, Scott, so what's your blog site so people can come and
Just go to Scott Wolter Answers, one word, .blogspot.com. Just type in Scott Wolter Answers. It'll come right up. And I've been doing the blog, God, it's probably going on 7 years now, and there's all kinds of topics on there. When we were doing America on Earth, every week I would write a blog when they aired, and people would write in, and I would answer their questions. And, of course, over the years I've done, my research for this new book. A lot of the stuff, there's bits and pieces in blogs that you'll see in the new book. Not everything, of course, but the Talpiot Tomb stuff, the Hooked X Tau Cross, that's all. I've had blogs on there. And you'll see I even let the trolls comment for a while. When they start getting obnoxious, I cut them off. And, the one thing I just ask people to do, if you're going to come on and make a comment, just use your real name. I mean, if you're going to call me a jerk or you don't agree with me, at least have the integrity to put your name behind your comments. I get a lot of these, anonymous bloggers that say this stuff. I mean, anybody can be a troll in their mother's basement.
Well, but then if they use their real name, then you and the Masons are going to get them.
That's right. We're going to have to send out our agents to go get them. I wish half the stuff that people think about Masons is true. I wish we had that kind of power, but...
Yeah.
Most of the time, the stuff you hear, it's mostly nonsense. But, and I wish more people would find out what it's really all about. I think the world would be a better place if we had more Masons. And people want to argue with me. I say, look, Masons founded our country. Do you realize that? The Declaration, it's a Masonic document. I mean, don't tell me the Masons are negative. I mean, we brag about these guys all the time. They get lionized to near godlike status. Does the fact that they were Masons have anything to do with their greatness? Of course, I'm biased, but I would argue yes.
Real quick, I got to say this real quick before I let you go. I actually, told somebody that once. I said, that Masons founded the country. George Washington was a Mason, blah, blah, blah. The Masons founded this.
Right.
No, they didn't. The Americans did.
There you go.
Well, you know what? Some people, it doesn't matter what you tell them, their minds are made up, and nothing else is going to get in, and all you can do is just say, okay, well, good luck to you, and just go on your way, because if they don't understand the fact, it's a fact that our nation was founded by Freemasons, and you're just going to have to accept it. That's what happened. It's a fact. Deal with it.
Yeah, I mean, how many comments do we get about, that couldn't be true. I saw it in the movie. You don't know how many times we get that on different shows.
Really,
that's going to be the most common one. Well, I know that can't be true because I saw it in the movie.
Yeah. Russell was Wyatt Earp.
Yeah, it's just
God.
It is really that bad. It really is.
Well, I know it's that bad, and I have to tell you that I think we need more Masons in the world. I think we need more Masons in government. I can guarantee you this. The Masons might not solve all the world's problems, but I can guarantee you this. Is if we had more Masons in government, we would have more people making decisions in the interest of the greater good than the personal good.
Yeah.
And that is not happening right now.
No, yeah, it's a big problem.
I don't think anybody can argue with that.
No, it's totally out of touch and out of control for a common citizen. Nothing's being done for the 90% that are working and trying to make it. The government's not working
for
them.
No, and the people that represent us, the ones that have the most power, are millionaires 10 times over, and they pass laws to make themselves and their billionaire friends more money. I mean, I run a business. This latest tax cut that the Republicans passed.
Yeah.
My partners, we just take more money.
Yeah.
And what it does is it gives the rich people more money to donate it to the political people that they want to support. So when the political people pass these laws, the money funnels right back to them. People don't realize that. I mean, come on. Oh, well. I don't want to get into politics.
No, it's depressing. It takes the smile off your face.
Yeah.
So that's the we're going to wrap it up. But Scott, it's always a pleasure having you on the show. It's always informative, and we love it. So thank you.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. And, you know, you guys are doing good work, so keep doing the good work. And you know what? It takes a village to turn this thing around, and everybody has to do their part. And you guys are doing your part, so keep it up.
Well, thank you. We're trying.
Thank you, Scott.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.